This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
There it is, Friday, Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. The number is 855-752-4842. Johnny Lupinacci, it's TGI. Thank God it's FBP, Friday Busted Pencils. Busted Pencils Friday. Thank God, TGI BPF. TGI, that's how it is. Come on, it's not that funny. Hey, it's been a week, man. It's been a week. You say I got, you know, trapped in that alternative universe there on Monday, being caught up in the bright, you know, northern
electromagnetic lights. Storm, dude.
The electromagnetic storm.
I was time up, travel, you know, back to this dimension. I remember
up in,
Tim.
Yeah, up in northern Michigan, I got sucked up in the peninsula up there. You know, I was hanging out and I disappeared. But if we're back, we got the show Tuesday. You know, awesome Wednesday. Educators Amplified in the house. And then last night, you know, great show, Aaron McKelkey. Yep. You know, so just a little rehash, you know, we've talked about AI on the show, lots of different ways with lots of different guests. And I know Johnny and I kind of play around each other as, like, you know, pro and con, like Tim's pro AI, Johnny's anti-AI. But the reality is here again, we keep really wanting to just bring this discussion because, you know, educated educators talk education. And right now, artificial intelligence is, well, you know, whether you like it, whether you think it's the most awesome thing, it's here and it is presenting some situations. And for teachers, it can be a real eye opener to figure out what it is you're doing. So we had a guest, Aaron McKelkey, who came on. He's a high school teacher, lives in Wyoming, and has gone kind of full force into saying, you know what, I'm going to bring artificial intelligence into my classroom intentionally. I'm going to empower the students to use it. We're going to actually not worry about whether we're cheating. We're going to actually put this forward and we're going to bring this technology. And Aaron just talked about that pathway of going, you know, like, I'm going to put it in. And guess what? He found resistance in his school by some of his own colleagues, teachers saying, what are you doing? Johnny, I liked his example too, specifically about, you know, the English faculty, the English department, like, oh my God, you know, all the students are leaving your class and coming in, and now they're cheating in English class. And man, it's a powerful thing. But he really, and I got a lot of feedback on this, he relayed the story though about a special education student in his world history class. And, you know, they read some pretty verbose texts, verbose for anybody. But, you know, a student with an IEP with a really, you know, lower reading level, the ability for AI to take that passage and put it into a grade appropriate framing and allow this student then access to the content that they were talking about in this world history. That was pretty powerful stuff, Lupinacci.
Well, I mean, Tim, I don't want to detract from that. I just want to say just good teaching. I mean,
yeah, well, exactly.
It's kind of ridiculous to me that I'm part of my stance against AI is just the frustration with the infatuation we seem to have, the obsession, especially teachers seem to have about this. Oh, it's going to cause cheating. It's like, turn the lens inward. If you think something's causing cheating 9 times out of 10, it's your prompt, your assignment, or your teaching that's disengaging or confusing. And that's all of us. We've been there. So I love the way that it's becoming, you know, a more powerful tool to accompany good teaching in classrooms. But, you know, the thing that's frustrating to me about it is AI is not new. It's right. Also not intelligence. That's a marketing slogan. You know, it's really helping, you know, it's coding that's helping process, you know, tasks quicker or more efficiently. It's not doing that in all cases perfectly. And in part, I kind of blame, in terms of the talking about it in classrooms, I blame teachers who are quick to ban anything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, come on. Then you've kind of, I can oversimplify things on a Friday. if you're an educator, I can within two or three sentences figure out what kind of educator you are, right? And you're going to fall into one of two categories. You're going to fall into an adult who seeks to control other people, and including in that, especially young people, or you're an adult who likes to be present at the birth of ideas and be kind of part of an education process. And those two types, to oversimplify this, kind of how I break it down. And I feel like all the people I know who are engaged and excited about the being present at learn at the space of learning, actually, that's the etymology of the word education, right? To draw out of, to be present at the birth of, right? So the Greek origins of that word educare. But I'm going to come back to that other version, the more schooling version. There's a whole lot of people who seek, and you know what? I'm just going to say it on a Friday, get off on controlling other people, especially young people. And so if you're that kind of person, you have a propensity. I'm not hating on you. I'm just saying, turn the lens inward. You have a propensity to find yourself in schools, because schools primarily are structured in a way to control situations at oftentimes the expense of the very purpose that they're there for, learning and teaching and being together in the sight of education, educare, that if we go back to the origins of that word, and guess what? I didn't need AI to look that up. I can figure that out quicker. But AI is going to do some exciting things, like say, what the heck is that guy talking about? I'm going to AI the origins of the word education, right? And then quicker than probably it took me to learn that, although I could pull it up from my human intelligence pretty quickly. Right? Someone could pull it up and they could just be like, yeah, man, I know what he's talking about. Or they could say it also has other origins and other roots. So, you know, I think it's important to recognize that we say, like, are there tools that help make teaching better? Yes. Are we often finding ourselves at odds and opposed to them and in discussion about it? Yeah, that's democracy. It's messy. It's there important to do. That said, I think one of the key things from yesterday that resonated with me from Aaron is not so much the opposition, because I like good opposition to stuff. It's not so much the example, because I don't want to like super crip AI. Right. It's not like, oh, it can help the kids who have special needs. It's like, man, if it's a powerful tool, it's bringing everybody up, especially those who probably only have that level of special need, because they're not fitting the control group of what we want schools to be. Again, I'm picking on that group of people who's like, well, you have a disability. Well, hold on. How do you know actually that I just don't fit into your complete, utter disrespect for divergence? Right. And it's just, it's all about norming kids into one kind of thing. And if they're not fitting that norm, well, they must be special needs. Let's give them some technology. Right. So, and I didn't hear that from Aaron, but I want to like caution away from that and get back to the thing I loved about it is, man, this is a guy who was trying to figure out how something that kids were engaged with might make learning in his classroom more meaningful, more lasting, more powerful. And he grappled with it, man. He shared with us how he turned the lens inwards. He made it a teacher-facing technology for a semester to experiment with it, to learn with it, to ask his students how they use it, and then begin to get into the classroom. Man, if that's, using YouTube, if that's bringing Google into your classroom, if that's, you know, the social media. I know so many teachers who are opposed to artificial intelligence who are using Google Earth in their classroom. It's like,
there you go.
Newsflash, the similar technologies are tied together. I also say, I like that we're digging into this, because there is some caution around anything that's branded as intelligent. It's only as smart as it's told what to do. Remember the limitations on that. And Aaron did that well too.
Yeah, so he did.
New technologies in teaching, man. New technologies.
It's new technology in teaching. I just didn't know who this Ed Curry was you were talking about. I didn't know if that was a person I hadn't met or something like that. So
I don't know. You know. For being an AI guy, you had plenty of time while I was going off.
It's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. The number is 855-752-4842. Yes, it's Friday, and thank goodness it's Busted Pencils on a Friday. Doing a little recap of the week. You know, great episode last night with Aaron McKelkey, artificial intelligence in the classroom. And as Johnny's pointing out, though, too, good teaching, taking a tool and really leveraging it in the way, as you said, Johnny, not for schooling, but to bring education to lots and lots of kids. And I say, I only put out the special needs student as the example, because you're right. It takes, though, that type of an example for somebody to go, oh, it works there. And you go, hey, and guess what? This is a powerful teaching and learning tool for everybody, And this is the way to bring that. But then, Johnny, too, I tell you what, a really popular episode this week, I'm looking at the downloads, was Tuesday, man, the Get Real episode on...
I heard that. People like that
science,
one.
Science of reading, man. People are just like, I mean, probably one of the most downloaded X or what used to be called Twitter videos. People are just putting it out, and then lots of social media kind of coming back and clipping it and putting out comments and quotes, largely around the idea of going like, whoa, and Johnny, you called this one going, uh-oh, been there, done this, just a whole nother day for us teachers right now, caught in the middle of a curriculum
same
war.
Beep, different day.
Yeah, same beep, different day, and that really got put out there on social media.
Man, but I got to follow this. I got to get more on social media.
You got to see this. But then the other part, though, too, on the science of reading, because maybe not you as much as me, because I really said, let's get real and let's criticize this whole
and
idea.
I said, say what?
Well, as you say, what? But again, we came at this, though, because the science of reading, what you're seeing is it's only, and that word only. So now you're like in states like Florida, states like Ohio, it's only the science of reading will be used to teach reading to kindergartners, first graders, second graders, third graders, and only approved curriculum, or in other words, curriculum that has been offered by a political donor to be able to create such an environment where, quote, there's an only curriculum. Well, yeah, the only curriculum can be used to teach the only way to teach kids to read. And I just going like, the problem with the only is that we need to be really cautious around saying only, because Johnny, you pointed out, when we're talking about learning, being present at that, you know, that time where learning occurs, man, only is typically the antithesis of learning, because there are all kinds of way learning happens. If we're going to restrict how kids learn to read to an only, man, don't be surprised if it doesn't come back and we have kids again in that reading. It's Busted Pencils. It's Fully Leaded Education Talk. It's Friday recap. I'll tell you what, though, Johnny Lupinacci, got some great news when we come back. Yeah,
the only thing you got to do is hang on with us, listener.
There it is. Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded Education Talk, Educated Educators Talking Education. The number is 855-752-4842. Hey, give us a call. Did you like the artificial intelligence episode? Did you hate it? Science of reading. What do you think about it? Johnny, before I get into the news, I do want to just do a little bit more of that, because I'm saying with the science of reading, with the mandate of it being the only, you know, you hear teachers are going like, wow, what do you, yeah, one more thing, you know, science of reading, same stuff, just believe another day. My goodness, here comes somebody else trying to tell us how to teach. My God, get out of the way. But the reality here, too, is I said, let's try to make this from the point of view of a parent who's hearing about the fact that their child now is going to have a science of reading only curriculum, and that's the only way kids are going to learn how to read. And the possibility is that you might have a child who goes, you know what? Science reading methodology, which is largely, I didn't say exclusively, largely phonetically based, chunked, you know, reading passages, not reading for enjoyment. You might already have, like my daughter in first grade was already reading. And so what she needed to become a better reader was not science of reading. She needed her reading teacher, who she had, to inspire her to keep reading even better and better books. And so only would have hurt my daughter, because she was the you know, the opposite of only. So just being cautious, you know, and thinking about this, going, how is it possible that a legislature, an elected group of people, can come in and mandate only something that your kid will only learn this, when the reality, and we've talked about this, is that learning, there is no only way of learning. Learning occurs in all kinds of different ways with different students through a diversity of methodologies.
Yeah, and it's important to remember, like, that we have this thing called the scientific method. That's not the science of reading, but like science of reading is kind of co-opting that language around it. But the scientific method, and then a thing called scientific consensus. Exactly. And that was the thing we really broke down on the show this week, that we've had whole shows on before. Like, what is the difference between, you know, the false equivalency and then scientific consensus? So, like, we know that there are a number of ways that children learn to read. We know that there are some pretty strong, there's some strong evidence behind a few of those working pretty good. And we've kind of tried to massage that around things called like balanced reading, or even some of the discussion, because I'm going to be fair, I dug into science of reading some more, and it draws on a lot of literature so that it can sort of feel like it's presenting.
It feels sciencey.
Right. But Tim, here's the thing I think that you're hitting a nail on the head with, and probably every listener can resonate with this too. If someone's telling you this is the only option you have, or this is the only thing, or this is the best thing, we all should raise an eyebrow if we can. I can't raise one eyebrow. I wish I could be cool with that kind of like
do the Mr. Spock. System.
But I mean, everyone should be looking around like, okay, what's coming next? Wait for it. And there it is, because we're the only thing and you need to buy it now. And that's exactly what this is. This is, you know, the co-opting, I'll call it that, but or just usurping of public government to push your product. I mean, there this is as gangster as it gets. I mean, it's like, if the goal is to push product, right? And the best thing to do is to market your product as the only and or the best, both of those being the ideal. If I can say that what I have is the best, and it's the only right way or the only way to go, right? And I can force that, like you're saying, we should be really skeptical. And quite frankly, we should be up in arms. We should be pissed off about this, because being forced, fed the only quote unquote option. And then guess what, Tim, like you've said, so buy these things that will make your teachers, and while we're at it, let's put teachers down, your teachers more effective, as though they couldn't do their job with the tools that they have, or better tools for the students that they're most familiar with and know the needs of. So, you know, I'm with you, man. It's a scary thing. I'm glad we can shine some light on it. I'm glad that listeners have contributed and that it's spreading around. And because, you know what, it is hard to be out there teaching. That's one of the other things we talked about, Educators Amplified this week. It's not easy to teach. I don't know that anyone thinks it is, but it's not easy to teach. And in fact, we can say, oh man, I appreciate the teachers out there. But sometimes, and Educators Amplified talked to us on Wednesday, like sometimes the solutions we have or the kind of ways that we show our appreciation don't really acknowledge the conditions that teachers are working in, that young people are learning in. And rarely do they result in change that's meaningful or lasting for the improvement of those conditions. So, you know, I think that was a reminder too, is we were really brainstorming that, you know, it's not easy to be a teacher out there. And I come back around to it. Tim, it's Friday. So
there it is.
All our teachers listening are like, whoo, thank goodness it's Friday. Also, for a lot of teachers, it's only a few Fridays left. And that doesn't mean that we talked about it. That doesn't mean that until you're not working, until the work shifts and changes a little bit and hopefully syncs up. And it's a tough time. It's always tough to be a teacher. It's a tough time to teach right now. Because I'll tell you what, we're feeling the crunch, like, oh my gosh, make sure you fit all this in. I know some schools are still even doing testing.
Absolutely, so, man.
Like, man, you know what everyone's thinking about right now is landing the plane, school year in a way that recognizes growth, that talks about the excitement of being present at change for young people, the hard work they've put in. You know, recognizing their emotional energy, their physical energy, and trying to vibe all together. trying to resonate so that we land smoothly and go into a break in a way that we come back really healthy. So, you know what? I just want to keep complimenting all the teachers out there for all the hard work that they're doing. And remembering, man, it ain't easy, right?
It ain't easy.
John, there ain't AI in the world that can do what teachers do. So hopefully, like Aaron brought up, there's some tools that can help us vibe and resonate with our students in a way that recognizes those four key areas that Educator Amplify talk about, right? You know, the physical, absolutely, the emotional, the rational, all the ways they talk about us thinking about being present in a learning space for ourselves, for other adults, for the learners in our room, the young people. So lots of exciting stuff happening. Lots of exciting stuff. Hey, we got caller Joanne. We got time to take Joanne before we go to the break? No, let's get her after the break. Joanne, we got a break coming up. So rather than cut you short, we're going to hold you over and we'll get to you when we come back. Tim, man, I'm amped up, man. It's Friday.
I see that, man. I got Johnny Lupinacci going. Hey, too, you know what? Get in behind Joanne, 855-752-4842, because, yeah, we want to talk to everybody on a Friday. It's Friday. A couple more Fridays left, as you pointed out, Johnny, and then we're going to try to land the plane. Yeah, you know what, though? When we're talking about landing the plane, I know you put this in there. What is it with recognizing that, you know, there might be one or two Fridays left, a few days, we're going to squeeze more learning and out of the kids and the teachers. And you're like, no, you're not.
Teachers, man.
You're not. You know what? Go with, be present, appreciate the teachers and appreciate the kids, learners. It's busted pencils. It's the end of the school year. Celebrate the reality of the present moment. Busted pencils. Call her Joanne when we get back. Yeah, some new bumper music. Loving it. 855-752-4842. Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded Education Talk. Anya and Jess, thank you so much. A little bit of mix up there. And not mix up, mixing new music in for the bumpers. Loving it. Hey, we're Friday.
Throw it into the mixer. Friday
weekly wrap up, and you know, we're doing a little bit of artificial intelligence, science of reading, and caller Joanne. Thank you, caller Joanne, for holding over the break. What's happening, our friend?
The show on Thursday was spectacular on AI, but I have a bit of a tangent. Would you have an AI entity, a robot, for example, as a commencement speaker? Now, commencements are really important, and most people remember their commencement speakers. And it's already happened in Duville University in New York that a robot, Sophia the robot, who was developed by Hanson Robotics, was the commencement speaker. Now, is that a type of sacrilege, or is that what we should expect in the future?
Whoa. It's funny you said that, Joe, and it's not funny to point out your question is a powerful one when we do that. But I just got acquainted to Sophia today. Didn't even know she existed out there. And now you're telling me that she's already got, you know, commencement speech gigs. Crap. Well, think about that. If you're somebody out there making a hard-earned living by giving speeches, it's like all of a sudden now you're out of a job because Sophia can deliver that better than anybody. I don't know, Johnny Lupinacci, because there's a part of me saying what Joanne, you said, you know, hopefully your commencement speech is memorable. I got to imagine that the Uville students that had Sophia the AI giving the commencement speech, they're going to remember that.
Yeah.
It's not an endorsement. It's just a realization.
I mean, and I you would think, because I'm kind of the enough of this AI stuff, but it's here, it's part of things. And I think it probably would have been, I don't know, I'd have to be there. But part of me would be like, really, that's our speaker? But also it could be innovative and exciting and memorable in a unique way. There's a possibility. It still needed somebody. It still got introduced. It still got, and this whole idea of, you know, like, I know no one said this here, neither Joanne nor you, Tim, but I mean, you kind of triggered me with the familiar. Is it coming for our jobs, people who give speeches? No, because there is still like, it's just stick to someone's speech. It happened to Ben Hansen or the university or the developers of that robot. It's an accompaniment to it. It's like if we had someone who played the saxophone give a speech and they played the saxophone as part of their speech. You know, to me, it's kind of a tool in this case. However, though, it does kind of spark an interest. Like, is this the direction we're going where we could have a historical figure, you know, give, you know, can somebody of, you know, the past now be AI generated and give a speech? We had a caller, you know, just the other day talking about, you know, audio created for a particular singer who lost his voice. And it's like eating. I mean, so there's lots of gray areas in this, again, where I think AI accompanies things. And a robot gave a speech. I'm willing to bet it's not the first time.
No.
I just think it's headlines now because we're all like, AI, it's taking everybody's job. It's taking over. I would be kind of like bummed maybe if I was at the commencement because I don't know if it was exciting or engaging. But that's no more, but I'm gonna be honest, that's no more bum than I'd be if they picked a kind of boring speaker.
I was gonna say, I was waiting for you to go there because it's like, guess what? I've been to my fair share of commencements and there have been some commencement speakers where I'm like, my, you know, pull out, get the hook, somebody pull them off, tell them to be quiet, shut their mic off. My God, you know, they're either ridiculously boring. They're saying stupid things. Hey, what if you get the most awesome commencement speech ever given by an artificial intelligence. Is that worth it as opposed to potentially rolling the dice and going, who are we going to give a couple bucks to say encouraging words to us today? And we're not going to really know if they're going to do a good job or not, you know? Well, and so, and I know DeUville's a small private school right outside of Buffalo, right? The ability to have big money to bring a big speaker. I don't know, John, I'm putting this out there. If I know that AI is going to give an awesome, awesome, encouraging, inspiring speech, I don't know, would I be tempted to say, well, let's do it all the time then.
Well, and it's pretty popular, you know, breakthrough technologically. I mean, it was in Cosmo, it was on the cover of a few different pop magazines. Right. And the robot has spoken before the UN. So I think it's aligned. My favorite thing about those, like one of the quotes I think was, yeah, it was weird. And I think that's like, you know, like that's kind of it. And as much as I'm like, whoa, are we going there? I'm also like, I kind of think it's unique.
It is.
And I'll call the prediction. I'll take a future bet out on this. We will have no commencement speeches before we have a bunch of robots giving them. And I do know a lot of schools have moved away from having a commencement speech. They may have like some words from different student groups. They may have words from leadership on campus, but they just don't bring in a superstar to kind of give the best, you know? And again, I mean, we're talking about the robot, but we haven't brought up the kicker from Kansas City.
Oh, right.
I mean, you know what I'm saying? So we want to like the bar is pretty low right now for commencement speakers. We're not batting 1,000 with these because there's I don't know whose idea it was to say like, hey, let's get a kicker from a professional football team. First of all, so why would we want to hear from a kicker from a professional football team? Look, I love that your job is to kick the ball through the uprights. Okay, I'm not hating on you. But also, when I think of positive enforcement and encouragement for a large group of young people about to go out into the world, almost none of them are going to kick stuff through the uprights, right? Almost none of them. But the big thing that you know, did come up was he utilized that platform to take us back into a past century, which a whole lot of people out there actually probably found cool. And that's an even bigger problem. So, I mean, I don't know. We got a little bit, we digress, but it is that season where commencements and graduations are happening. And, you know, I'm going to take a future out on this one that we will have no commencement speeches before we have, robots giving them all.
Did you see that little kind of cut across there, that text from Aaron McKelkey, our guest last night?
Cool saying, picture of him.
Cool picture of him, man. You know,
like a NASCAR like driver. He had like cool colors around him.
What prompted all the AI debate tonight? What prompted? That might have been you, Aaron McKelkey. You may have prompted all of the AI debate. Johnny, you see what he's making fun of there? Kind of twisting, prompting. Because AI doesn't do anything unless you prompt it. And so guess what?
And come back to Aaron last night. Man, one of my favorite things, and we've seen this, I love this for the teacher who's like, I don't think they should be using it. They shouldn't be, like, it's our job to be paying attention that they're going to use it. So if we avoid, this is like rule one, like top rule of teaching teenagers, right? And I would just say children, if it's going on and you oppose it, you can bet even if you ban it, it's happening. Again, two types of teachers. Teachers that like to be present at the birth of ideas, and teachers like to control people. And right, we have a bunch of both. Fortunately, we have a bunch of the other kind, but we have a bunch of
both. You see producer Anya and Jess getting involved there with the serious, incredible going like, yeah. Jess, what are you guys agreeing to right there?
We've both taught teenagers, and so we were just reminiscing a little bit and just having a little moment. We were saying that the fastest way that we were saying maybe we could actually get these kids to learn the material that we wanted, we'll just ban it, and then they will learn it. Then they will spend so much time dedicated to it.
How they might learn it is the problem. Like with AI, I like this. It's got limitations, and Aaron even talked about some of those. There are some ways you could use it totally irresponsibly, right? So what better thing for a teacher to do than to say like, hey, let's figure out how this can be useful to our learning together. What? That's cheating. No, it's actually learning. Half the stuff we call cheating is just cooperation and collaboration in the real world. Let's be really honest. That like, hey, guess what, the answers are in the back of the book, but don't go look at them because that's cheating. Wait, so there's answers to the stuff you're asking me and I'm not allowed to go to them,
right?
In what world is that like the real world? Or don't work with the people next to you. It's like, okay, so what are we teaching actually?
Don't work in a team environment where all of you participating is the, you know, you say the combined effort of everybody, right? It's only in school where you go, don't look to your left, don't look to your right, eyes down on your own paper. If I see those eyes moving anywhere, you're cheating. Well, my God, what if learning is a cooperative activity where truly the engagement of others is where we do our best learning?
That's been proven. There's a whole thing called learning theory. One of my favorite things of the past month, Tim, sometimes I totally forgot about this moment, but you will get a kick out of it. Heck, it's Friday. Let's let it rip.
Okay.
Like I was talking about this importance of social learning, collaborative stuff, and even Yes was talking about AI. Like what if together we asked some prompts and then compared them and then looked at our original kind of thing that we were deconstructing. And we had a big discussion on what AI missed, what did it get? And by golly, we were learning together about it. And the person opposing it says, you know what? Of course you would say that. You're a communist. First of all, I couldn't be further from being communist. But they said that kind of group work is because of Karl Marx and communism. And I thought, wow, what a leap. But how indicative. First of all, like not communist. Communists I would probably ban the whole, like I'd have control of the whole thing, and the dictatorship of the classroom would be about not sharing, you know, it'd be about producing knowledge for me. Anyways, I couldn't be further from being communist, but I thought it was hilarious that the thought of, and I think we probably take that for granted, because I think sometimes bridging the gap of understanding where people think like democracy and working together became a bad thing. And somehow, and I'm not picking on this one person because it's not the first time I heard it, I was just reminded of it. Somehow, working together in a community to embrace difference and to work collaboratively was positioned as communism. And that could be further from the truth. Is it anti-capitalist to really work together? probably, but anti-capitalism and communism are not the same thing.
No. Well, you explain democracy. It's like, wait, working together, you're against that. And in fact, you're calling that, wait, hold on. Truly engaged democracy. You know what? Yeah, there's lots of disagreements, but boy, the idea that we have to work these things out together, man, that's the essence of democracy. Form of collaboration, cooperation, regurgitation, go back in, you know, have a little bit of a disagreement, come back together. But then realizing, Johnny, you know, now you're making me think of those core democratic values we always talk about, though. Man, we're doing this stuff for the good of the commons, everybody, and realizing that. And when I hear somebody throwing out the communist or socialist term, that to me is there, it's like, wait, so you're against the whole actually having a benefit because it may infringe on your ability to get total enjoyment or something out of this. You're like going like, that's the opposite of democracy, man. You can't have it, Johnny Lupinacci.
Well, but it's also the wildest dream for a laissez-faire economist who wants to say, I want you to believe you're in a democracy, but really I actually want an authoritarian free reign to do whatever I want so that I can make money or my company can make money or the utilization of government, right? Not for the best interest of the people, but for the best interest of profit. And that to me is like kind of what we need to be kind of aware of when people say, well, that's communist. No, it's actually anti-authoritarian.
Mm-hmm. Busted pencils.
How do we get there? It's fine.
Yeah, man. Okay. Okay. Oh. Wait. When we get back, Johnny, a little bit of opt-out news, for the listener. Yeah. Come on back. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Johnny Lupinacci, I was thinking, though, before we get into the news, it's Friday, and I'm wondering if people are at the Minocqua Brewery.
Oh, man, I bet you they are.
You know, because, I mean, it's a Friday, right? And when you're thinking about a Friday, the potential of saying, hey, you know what? Let's go and talk about democracy. And if we're going to talk about democracy, hey, where's one of the best places to do that? That's it. The Minocqua Brewing Company at the Madison at the Tap Room. Johnny, do you remember why?
Well, yeah, man. Busted Pencils is sponsored by Minocqua Brewing Company, who sued the state of Wisconsin to end its parasitic voucher system that hurts public schools. Tim, Minocqua Brewing Company is making Wisconsin great again, one beer at a time. Check out MinocquaBrewingCompany.com to see where you can buy their progressive beer.
Yeah, just thinking, you know, on a Friday, what a great place to go. Talk about public education. Talk about democracy. Minocqua Brewing Company, the Tap Room in Madison. Go check it out. John, I was saying, though, you know, a little bit of news, because we always try to get to some education news on Friday, trending education news. And, we, you know, great week, though, so we were having lots of, you know, reflection on the week. But I was talking about opt-out, and people say opt-out, opt-out. Tim, you were part of that opt-out movement. That's like when you got kind of weird and you decided that your son and daughter shouldn't take standardized tests, and so you opted them out. Yeah, yeah, that's an opt-out. That's one form of opt-out. How did you do that anyway? How did you get your kids to opt out? Well, at the time in Pennsylvania, the ability to opt out of a high-stakes standardized test was through a religious opt-out. And yes, some of the families that we created the opt-out movement, we then went in and we pointed out that we had a religious objection to high-stakes standardized testing. People were like, well, what is your religious objection? Actually, technically, at the time in Pennsylvania, we just had to say religious objection, and the opt-out was given to us. I, at the time, though, pointed out that, you know, as a potentially, you know, practicing Unitarian Universalist coming out of the Christian tradition, that there that the thou shalt not judge and all kinds of other things. So I'm religiously objecting to making my son and daughter take part in a system that is fully all about casting judgment. So that's what we did then. Well, so the opt-out, and then we've talked about opt-out too, and remembering saying, if we're teaching some things, do parents have the right to opt their children out of content or curriculum that they feel might be objectionable? Well, that happened in Montgomery County, Maryland, and the Fourth Circuit denies Maryland parents suing over LGBTQ plus curriculum opt-outs. In other words, parents, Muslim, Jewish, and Christian parents sued Montgomery County School Board to say this LGBTQ plus curriculum, the content, is against our religion and we want to opt out. Well, the court said, sorry, you can't opt out of this. There is no religious opt out to get out of LGBTQ plus. Johnny, interesting. So I was able to
go to a private school. I mean, okay. That's the thing. There is. The opt-out you get in this context is go to a private school. I'm cracking up, Tim, because I think it's hilarious that you utilize the UU to get out of your test. Because I also think, like, good for you on the opt-out, but also, you know, potentially problematic misuse of, like, religion to get out of a test. But, hey, anything by any means necessary, because the test is kind of bunk. Right? We're talking about high-stakes testing. But in terms of precedence, I couldn't be happier to hear that news. I don't know about it yet, Tim. I'm going to be reading about it. But to hear, you know, the state of Maine or the courts in the state of Maine.
Maryland.
Okay, saying over in Maryland. It's, you know what, my East Coast geography is much better than you think. I just take M's and W's and start mixing them all up all over. But the idea that the court said, too bad. Because ideally, I think I totally agree with this here, right? If you want to utilize, like, everyone should have freedom to religion. I think I really think people's access to their beautiful faiths and all the ways not causing harm to others is great. So, like, how can we, you know, have that kind of diversity? It's absolutely something to celebrate. But in a public school, right, it can't be the reason why you opt out of the common good. Right. Mm. And you know what we know about LGBTQ plus community is they're part of our community. They're part of the common good, how they grow, the rights that they have, who they love, how they love, how they grow into understanding that whole part of who we are as people and one another. Right. You can't opt out of that kind of learning. It's part of becoming a healthy person in our community. Right. So good for Maryland courts. Right. Great for diversity everywhere to continue to set that precedence. Kind of bad for, where was it, Pennsylvania, Tim, you were talking about? Threw them under the bus because they probably should have told you, Tim, you have an option, go to a different school.
I guess they could have. But
talking different things here. Because
I was going to say, the way you presented that, I don't feel nearly as bad as somebody might potentially, because of realizing, Johnny, you pointed out saying, okay, this opt-out here was trying to opt out of the common good. The high-stakes standardized test imposition, there was nothing in the research that said this would result in goodness or something beneficial for the common good. In fact, high-stakes standardized testing was at that time, and even now still, was used to divide and to break up. It was a, you know, a judgment system that was designed to break up the public schools, the common good. It was meant to undermine. So when we were opting out, because we didn't want to participate in a system that was undermining the common good, public education.
Yes, great. But here's the other thing that I'm going to throw down. There's scientific consensus around these tests being harmful. So
exactly.
I side with you, but for different reasons, because, like, you could have an opinion, or you'd want to opt your kid out on the opposition to scientific consensus, which is actually what the court case in Maryland is really about, is saying, like, we have scientific consensus that people are different and they're different in these ways that we have scientific consensus on, not a hunch, not a challenge to scientific knowledge, a basis around, like, medical, emotional, all kinds of knowledge consensus It said, this is the best interest of what's healthy. So, Tim, I land with you, but for different reason. I said, Tim, you should be able to say, my kids aren't going to participate in this bunk system, right, that doesn't support scientific consensus on how children learn.
You're making fun of my Unitarian Universalism.
And I love the Unitarians, man. I'd be loving people's religions. I'm just saying, come on, you got out of testing on a kind of interesting angle. Let's talk more about it. Man, I love being on the show with you all. Thanks, Jess and Anya. Thanks, listeners.
See you on Monday.